Hi, everyone. You're listening to In the Open, a podcast by Mental Health America, where we talk all things mental health related.
Welcome, everybody. We are back at In the Open.
Hi, guys. How is everybody doing out there?
And America is here with us today, and we are going to talk about trying things on your own. A lot of people just say this when they're like, and they say it more than they type it into Google, and people accidentally find this stuff on our website because we realize a lot of people out there don't really want to, they don't want to see a therapist. Like, that's a scary process and it's very hard to get into a therapist. So a lot of people want to just know, like, do I really need to see a therapist, or do I really have to take medications to get better, or will depression just go away? I mean, I know we talked about, is this forever? And I think the next step of that is to say, okay, what is it like if you want to try things on your own and get better without talking to a mental health professional?
Well, I think for many people, there is a question about what it means to try things on your own, because there really may not be an idea of what that means. So I think for us, what's important is to kind of think about, if I want to do something on my own, does that mean that I'm not ready to go and see a therapist? Or is it just me trying to figure out what's happening with me first to then say, I want to try to see if whatever I can do, taking maybe small steps, will improve whatever is happening.
A lot of people who don't think about mental health or experience mental illness, I think that they think you just maybe wake up one day and you're like, oh, I guess I'm sick. I guess I should go see a therapist. And it really isn't like that. Like, we spend a lot of time, even when we've already been sick before and, you know, it starts to come back. I think there's a period where you're like, oh my gosh, what does this mean? And like, you know how hard it is, might be, to go see a therapist if you're not already in one, or find somebody you like. So I think a lot of people feel like, I just need to see if this might go away.
Yeah, but it's not like, for example, you know, something very physical. Like, you think of, you have like a wart on your hand or something, you know, you go get some over-the-counter stuff and you're like, okay, let me fix it because maybe this will work. It's a little bit harder because you have to look inward to really think, what am I supposed to try?
Isn't that the equivalent?
Get better.
That's like the mental health equivalent of wart treatment.
Yeah.
That process is like, oh, I'm not going to go talk to somebody, but let me try and figure out like where this is coming from. And that's why people Google like, am I stressed or am I depressed? Like, what is this?
Yeah. It's that what's going to work over the counter before you actually go to the next step.
And is there an assumption that you're eventually going to have to see somebody, or is it the case that you can get better without ever seeing a therapist?
I think it's a little of both based on a person's circumstances, because there may be situations where, like, at the beginning, it may, you know, like the earlier stages of mental health stuff, you're able to get on a better track of, you know, being well. Yeah. But it really depends on how far along one of these issues is. Like, if it's like really at a stage of severe depression, you trying something over the counter may not necessarily work as easily as if you had started 2 years ago, you know?
Yeah. I would say that how bad it is a good measure of how hard it's going to be for you if you're trying things on your own. But I know a lot of people who can't afford care, and so their only option is to do things on their own. And many of them have found communities and options that help them get better, because they literally just don't have the opportunity or
other
the ability.
Options.
Yeah, right. Like, so I'm not going to say like, oh, that's not possible. Nobody should ever say that, because we don't know what works or doesn't work well enough to know what works for every person. But I think we'll also talk in our next podcast about like what it's like to work with a therapist, about like what that experience is like and why that can be helpful. And that's just not what we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about the over the counter. And like, yeah, if you never want to or can't go see somebody, what can you do? And what is that like?
So, you know, we know journaling is something that is really good for people, writing things down, because it helps you get the thoughts that are kind of bubbling in your head onto paper, and then you may be able to reflect on what you've written. You know, like, if you write every day, you can see if there's differences in how you were on Monday compared to Thursday. Were there things that happened between that time frame that were really upsetting to you? How did you handle them? That's like one aspect. And that's kind of fairly easy to do. You don't have to go get anything. You just need paper and a pen. And it's different than you like taking notes on your phone, which some people may do that too. You may have a phone and you can do that. But it's the aspect of the physical aspect of writing that may help some people kind of start this process.
You can keep track of a lot of different things. Like some people just keep track of their moods on a mood tracker app or something like that, or on a piece of paper. They'll just note when they get specific feelings. And what that is helpful is to track how long people are experiencing stuff. I always tell my girls, like, you know, if you notice that you're only feeling bad for a few days, like that's not necessarily a mental illness, but it might be tied to hormone changes. For other people, it's like, if you notice that you're getting upset every day at school, or you're getting upset every time you talk to somebody, what keeping track of stuff helps to do is finding patterns that gives you some insight about what's going on. Because I think that's sometimes the first step in trying to, you can't figure out what you're fixing if you don't know what you're fixing.
Right. I think that's huge.
And journaling and mood tracking are big factors in that. Yeah.
There are other things, you know, that are kind of self-care pieces where, for example, diabetes that's undiagnosed, you know, you don't even know that. So it's that tracking enables you to figure out, like you're saying, patterns of thought, of behavior, and then of actions that you're going to engage in.
But let's talk about exercise and food just briefly, right, this time, because it's about doing things on your own. And I don't think people, it's funny because we always tell people, like, you should check out your exercise and you should check out your food. But we have research to explain why. But I think it's good to spend a few minutes here just telling people why food and exercise matters, or what are those influences they have on your body, and what you should actually experience so that when that happens, people can tie any kind of change to what it is that exercise or food does for them. So let's just talk about exercise. Like, why should people exercise? Because what does it actually do for their brain?
It actually reduces, increases and releases endorphins in your body, which...
Okay.
Endorphins,
what does that mean?
Endorphins are happy little things that happen in your brain that make you feel better.
But I don't feel better when I start running. I feel like I'm itchy all over and my body hurts and I'm sweaty and I'm gross and I'm mad at myself because I'm mad that you told me I needed to go exercise and it actually really sucks.
And I totally get that because I hate exercising. I hate having to set myself a reminder that, hey, go exercise. But we're talking about two different things, right? Are we saying people have to go out and like be full sweaty to get the benefits of exercise? Or is it even you going for a walk outside? Is that exercise?
Yeah, I hate exercise. I'll be the first to tell you I know that it helps me, but I freaking don't do it. I'm horrible. So it's funny because from a mental health perspective, it does take time for you to get the health effects of exercise, to like feel what we'll feel, which we could talk about. But the first thing I feel like, because when I go out, I can barely, you know, I can walk and I can slow jog in minute increments. I'm not going to go out and run a mile, right? Like that is, I'll be pissed if I do that.
Yeah.
And I'll come home and I'll eat a bag of Cheetos and I will be like, why did I hate myself? I'm never going to exercise again. So I have to set like reasonable incremental goals. But the benefit I noticed, and I don't know if you experienced this too, the first thing that I experienced when I exercise is I got my butt out of the couch and out of my house. So I feel like, oh, I got a badge. Like I did a thing.
Yeah.
I got myself out of the damn house. And then it was like, oh, I feel less anxious because at least if I can walk like in a space that's calm, it's like way better than the stuff that I have in my house that makes me feel sad and anxious. It's just like an environmental change that helps just be like, okay, I'm doing something different. Does that make sense?
That totally makes sense. There is this whole aspect of also you being outside of what your norm is so that physically your body can reap the benefits of that, right?
Yeah.
But there's also this other aspect. Maybe it's not safe for me to go out, or like I like to work out at night, 10:30, 11, I'm working out. I know. But
are you serious?
I cannot work out in the morning. I'm not a morning person. I'm not going to get up and then go work out and take a shower and all. No way. I know that about myself. So it is about setting these very real goals. And tiny goals are huge at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you've never done anything to take care of yourself physically, right? And that includes you going for a walk. You even doing like a YouTube video, because there are so many.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you can't do 20 minutes at first, but you do 10. And that will help you. Because it's like you're saying, you have done something.
Mm-hmm.
And that little something can help you. The thing that I think you have to balance is where people say, that wasn't enough. You know, it's like, well, I could have done 30. No. Mm. Mm-mm. Mm-mm. You're good with the 10, man. Own it. Own the 10 minutes that you did.
We don't do what I should have, could have.
Yeah, you know, and that's another piece of doing it on your own, right? Being able to stop that negative thought and be like, stop it.
Yeah,
I talk to myself all the time. So I'm like, well, America.
We'll talk about a lot of talking about to ourselves all the time. Yeah.
Yeah.
But okay. So, but before we move to thoughts though, let's finish up on exercise. So like, tell me, and I think about this too. It's like, what's that like when you start to realize that exercise is having a meaningful impact on your mental health? Like you're talking about endorphins, but that's like the science behind it. And I know there's like inflammation or something, like exercise actually makes your brain heal better and like work better. But what does that feel like? Like, what does it feel like to you when you realize, oh, this is why I exercise?
It makes me feel two things. One, it makes me feel proud that I put myself first mm-hmm. and accomplished that for myself. Mm-hmm. Nobody else has put that on me.
Yeah.
And then the other aspect of it is a release of all the crap mm-hmm. that I'm carrying.
Mm.
And that's what I feel. I remember one time I was like working out, doing like weight training and all this stuff. And then I just started crying and I was like, oh my God, what the hell? Why am I crying, man? You know, and my boyfriend was like, are you okay? I was like, just leave me alone. I have to go do this, you know. But it was this release of all this emotional pent up stuff.
Yeah.
And at the end, I was like, dude, that felt great.
That's funny.
So, you know, it's about finding what works for you. And an exercise really doesn't have to be at the beginning this thing where you're pushing yourself to your limits. No, man, not at all. Little things make a huge difference.
That's right. You know, it's like after I get over the pain of the exercise or like just the motivation, it does really feel good that you're like, oh, I got to this place where I really committed to myself. And then, yeah, I think a lot of people who really like exercise, especially like if I think about the mental health problems that are really good with exercise, like depression is hard because I'm like totally unmotivated. And like that beginning 90% of just getting my feet, my shoes on, like when I'm depressed, it's very, very hard to exercise. Mm-hmm. And that's so compelling that like exercise is like hard thing to do for like a DIY if you're depressed. But for anxiety, like I already got so much pent up anxiety in my body. You're right. Like when I'm having a really anxious time, or if I'm having a like a panic attacky time in my life, and I can go and do like a sprint or something just to like feel, there's something about, there are a lot of different things that you could do this, but it's like, if I feel anxious and I go do something that makes my heart race, like the way my anxiety does,
mm-hmm.
but it's different. Like it comes from something else. For whatever reason, that's like a mind trick for me. Like, I'm like, oh, this feels more controllable. Like, or at least it feels like the same thing, but different enough that I can just, it just makes me feel better, you know?
Yeah.
And it is like that pushing and that release and that like feeling that energy be processed in a different way feels good. Yeah. How about food?
Food.
Why should I give a crap about eating better?
Yeah.
Because we tell people all the time, oh, you should eat better.
You and your Cheetos.
I love them.
Every time you're like, I'm going to sit on the couch with
Cheetos. Cheez-Its, blocks of cheese, all kinds of cheese.
I think there's such an emotional tie to food for many people that understanding that connection is like a starting point. Because you're right. everybody tells us we should eat better, but there are actual benefits to eating better that ultimately can help you with your mental health. For example, reducing your sugar intake. Why is that important?
Because the diabetes. No,
not just the diabetes. Because sugar is addictive, one, okay? So if you use a lot of sugar, then your body, you know, if you're used to it, you're going to have like the sugar high, and then you get down into these low dumps. And that's just not good for you, because then you have less energy, because you just feel like, ugh, why am I going to go do anything? I feel like a potato on the couch, and there's no reason for me to do anything. So any idea that you may have of maybe trying to go walk for 10 minutes is like, why? You know, so that's one aspect of it. Then what about like eating things that are not fried, for example, which is a comfort food. Hello, duh, I know it. But it's better for us in the long run.
I mean, so for exercise and food, yeah, both of those things are about, I mean, like on the science side, it's about inflammation of your brain, right? But food takes longer. Like I am addicted to crap food, right? Or like it is addicting to eat sugar. It feels freaking great for all the wrong reasons, and fat and french fries and all the things that not only taste good and feel great, but also remind me of like my childhood when my mom would go every day and buy me a Jack in the Box sandwich every day. So I tie my mom's love to like a fast food sandwich. And every time I drive by those places, I feel love because of how my mom fed me. So I don't have immediate responses to eating good food, but I did. This is, I only recently realized this in my old, like now that I'm in my 30s, because I finally got like, I don't know if it was brave or whatever, but I finally got the just, I'm going to do something hard and just cut all the crap out to just see what it feels like to not eat sugar and not eat grains. Like people talk about gluten allergies, and not eat dairy, which is really hard because I love the cheese, even though I'm totally lactose intolerant. 14 days after not being on the stuff, I honestly, there was like a fog that lifted from my brain. Have you ever done one of these diets where you like clean stuff out and you don't, and then like, did you ever feel that fog lift? Cause I was like, oh damn, I thought that was depression, but I realized maybe that's just all the crap food, like clogging up my brain cell activities from like working correctly. And I was all of a sudden able to think better, and like felt what I thought was part of depression and not being able to think was maybe related to like the food.
I think though, for many people, like I said, there is an emotional tie to food. We also have to think about like eating disorders and things like that, and repetitive behaviors that people can engage in. Like, I'm going to go exercise in a sweatsuit to try to, you know, lose weight. And that's not what we're talking about. We're not talking about a certain body image that you have to have or anything. It's about finding the place for you where you feel comfortable. I think everybody has this place where you know you could feel better, but it's hard understanding what that means. So like, I haven't done like a detox or anything like that, but I cut sugar and I was like, oh my God. And then one day I had sugar again and I felt so bad, not emotionally. I just felt physically sick.
Yeah.
And I didn't understand why. And I was so tired. And then it like dawned on me out of nowhere. I was like, oh my God, this is the sugar at work.
That's where it's related to the mental health. Of course, we want people to be healthy. It's really about, this is where it's not necessarily about your thoughts, but the way that your brain literally functions, you're going to feel good or you're going to feel bad. And food and exercise are the things that help you to just feel like, hey, I actually just feel good, versus like just feeling like junky all the time, like feeling bogged down, low energy, can't sleep, which all affect the way we also process our emotions and like relate to other people. So I think that's where food and exercise is something you do. Yeah, it's a DIY thing that's good for your health in general that you can start taking a look at. And also, I think what you're saying too is like, when you start to cut out specific foods, you start to realize that maybe you have an intolerance to something, or maybe you are very sensitive to something in a way that might even cause migraines or pains and aches that will affect your crabbiness. and your mental illness and or your mental health. Like, I think that until you kind of cut stuff out and try to reintroduce them, you don't really even know how those things are related to the way your brain works.
Yeah, because when you think about headaches and it's on its own, right, a lot of people, their main like physical complaints are headaches, back pain, things like that. And for a long time, I lived with migraines. If you want to have somebody like live with a migraine, that's like the thing that I would do to my enemy, right? Like, here, that's my superpower. Take one of these, you know? And it's like the worst thing. But I had to learn what were my triggers and avoid them so I wouldn't feel like that. But you don't know that until somebody says, have you thought about this? Is there a connection between you eating whatever and you feeling this way? Because I, you know, for me and my culture, everything is tied to food. Everything. Every social relationship conversation that we have is like, oh, well, we're going to go do dinner. We're going to go lunch, you know?
Yeah.
And that's just the way that my culture is. So if you do feel like you're eating something that's not super healthy or not even on the spectrum of health, you know, then afterwards you feel like crap.
Let's talk about what that's like to like tackle your emotional stuff on your own. Like, what does it look like at the beginning?
Denial. He's saying that everything's fine with me and it's the rest of the world that is making this happen.
Okay, so the opposite of that is the acceptance then. The first step to doing it on your own is acceptance and recognition.
Yeah.
Which is where if you're keeping track of stuff, it's helpful to see, like, if you're journaling, acceptance and understanding and self-compassion starts with like knowing your junk. One of the things for education purposes is like, you should know if your mental illness comes from like a biological place or if it comes from trauma, what we call like the environmental stuff, right? So like, it is helpful because if you're keeping track of stuff and you're like, my brain is not working and it's not tied to a relationship and it's not tied to a hormone or a health problem or an accident, then maybe you have clinical depression. If that's the case, you may have to do some hard work to like maybe eventually talk to somebody about biological methods of getting better because it doesn't come from a trauma or something. But for a lot of people, it's not that black or white. Like, it's a mix of both. It's like, I have a biological thing that might mean that I need medication, but I have a lot of trauma and like relationship problems and thought problems and bad habits and thought habits that feed into my mental health problems. Let's just assume that you're not going to go see a therapist today and you're not going to go see a psychiatrist to get meds. You want to work through the emotional junk on your own. So it takes acceptance to see it and understanding. What can people do to start breaking down the layers of their emotional environmental stuff? For example, I'll give you an example. Like, journaling you talked about was a good one. I think if you start paying attention to your feelings, you realize you're actually really horrible at identifying feelings.
You remember how we talked about how like you're more feely and I'm not feely?
Yeah.
For me to get to a point of understanding that it's okay to be vulnerable.
Yeah.
And what that means was like a huge step. And being able to say, for example, like actually using the words, right? Not like I feel sad. Okay, maybe. But really, there are so many words that help to describe your emotions. Mm-hmm. But we most often just go to the one that is kind of what everybody talks about. Mm-hmm. I feel like crap. What does that mean?
Yeah.
What do you actually feel?
Yeah.
And I think when people start really looking at that and writing it down, mm-hmm. there's sadness, there's anger, resentment, feeling overwhelmed, underloved, a range of things, but it's helping you put into words the actual emotion.
Yeah. So learning feelings is like a whole process. And I think as we talk, what I'd love to do is like probably after talking about like if you should talk to a therapist or a psychiatrist, we're going to dive into like what that really is like to build a feelings habit and learning habits. But yeah. Definitely. So one thing is learning what the hell feelings are, learning what to identify when you're having negative feelings and slowing that down so you can get better at labeling your actual feelings and not just saying like, I feel mad or sad,
right,
or happy, which is basically all we do.
Yeah. Or say, I'm fine.
I'm fine. Yeah. Yeah. The favorite teenage phrase. Why is identifying feelings important?
Because you can't tackle anything without fully understanding what the feeling is and what it's tied to.
And I would add why I lash out the way I lash out because of the way I feel.
Yeah, where that little monster pops out. Yeah, definitely.
Do you really have to understand why you have them?
Not at the beginning. It's hard to figure out like, oh, the fact that I got so angry was because my older brother used to treat me this way. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're not going to get there, right?
I agree. I mean, I think that the why is more important for the long-term journey. Because once that part heals, I think it's easier to do these other habits. Because otherwise that part of like why I hate myself or why I struggle is like always there. I never ever tackle that trauma. But where they are coming from, like, and why I react the way I do and slowing that process, that is about the present moment. You don't have to dive into your past at all. It's just like America looked at me funny with her eyes. And the way her sassy phrase or her tone just triggered me. And I felt guilty and I felt shame that I was intruding on her space. And so I reacted by saying something sassy back and running away. But that's a skill. So that's something we'll talk about more about what that's like in practicing that. So knowing your feelings, and then the next thing is like knowing where they come from and how you react and slowing it down. We'll call that slow things down. That's a skill for sure. That's like so important.
Okay. So you're slowing things down. And what's the next thing, I guess, that would come about?
Making better choices.
Like, so you have to spend some time understanding all this stuff, making the effort to write stuff down or keep track of it in some way, however you want to do that. Mood trackers, all that stuff.
Yeah.
But then knowing now that maybe there's patterns, looking at those patterns and saying, okay, what do I have control over that I can try to change?
Yeah.
Is it me saying, hey, why are you looking at me funny? And the other person says, I'm not looking at you funny. So it's not so much about trying to like tackle everything at once and being like, oh, I'm going to make the world better and I'm going to make myself better. And all of a sudden it's great. No, it's about, again, those little changes for you to say, in this moment, I thought about this last week. Maybe I should answer differently.
Yeah, you're right. This is the stuff that just takes time. And we all do it. There's nothing special about this behavior that's like, oh, people with mental illness. Like, I'm not like that. Like, I just don't believe that, right? Like, we all, human beings, do this because human beings are emotional and reactive. And a lot of human beings are just jerks. So we all respond, react to our feelings in good and negative ways. I think just some people, like I read this article about Inuits and how Inuits raise their children from babies to be real chill. Like, unless you're an Inuit, you're otherwise existing in our culture, in our society, where everybody is reactive and like really bad at knowing feelings. So yeah, you got to make better choices slowly over your life to rebuild good habits.
Okay. But in the immediate future, right now, between me trying to figure stuff out and me saying, I'm going to try things on my own, how long am I supposed to try this for? 2 weeks? A month?
Well, so this is the thing. Like, if I'm like, oh, I have to try things on my own, I think when you go down this path, I know that there are things that I do that are bad coping skills. Those are the things that I need to own up on and like accept and understand that I need to get rid of those things. So for example, and those are things I can, once I realize it, like your choice is whether or not you continue to do the things you know that are crappy or make a choice to not do them. So for example, and I get, these are my bad habits and maybe you share yours for people to get it. But like I shut down. So if I sense that somebody is attacking me, I have avoided. So one of my things is like, I just don't talk and I look at people real cold.
Man, for people that know me, it's hard for me not to have you understand what I'm feeling because my face says it all. But when I get to that place, I get angry. Like, I get super angry. And all I want to be like, yo, back up. And I take a moment because otherwise I will just say really hurtful things. Yeah. I know that I can.
Yeah.
Like that face that you're saying, I get to this place. I'm like, okay, great.
Yeah.
I'm not.
Mm-hmm. I don't need you.
I'm not saying anything else.
And so it's funny because part of our choices is either to lash out, which feels great and is horrible for relationships, or turn it so in that you just beat yourself up and make yourself the martyr.
Yeah.
And both of those reactions are horrible.
Yeah.
Like, you got to cut that crap out because none of that's healthy. You didn't process your feelings and respond in a good way, but I definitely done both.
I had to learn, like, to get to this place of me saying, okay, you don't have to get like super angry and use a lot of curse words to get your point across. Just mm-hmm. say what you feel. And because I didn't really know how to say what I felt, the first thing that came to mind was just like, oh, you know, F you, whatever, blah, blah, blah. So then I had to be like, no, the fact that you did this, you know, this is how I feel about that. But it takes time to get there.
And it's harder when you're, I don't know if I feel like I'm giving an excuse for having like a mental illness, but there's a reason why I destroy everything, or I've destroyed my relationships, or I've ruined relationships is tied to mental illness and not to other things. Because I think, like, is there a process where, because we feel or process feelings so intensely when we're in the bouts of a mental health episode, right? That inhibition, or what you just described, the process of doing that to slow it down is either so hard or impossible, or I'm exhausted. All the other things that help protect me from not destroying everything is gone. So there is that. We have to acknowledge that when it comes to mental health, like, episodes make everything harder. So what you have to do is practice making better choices when you're good, instead of just assuming life is great. So I'm going to just pretend that everything's fine. It's like, no, actually, when you're better, that's when you do the hardest work, because it helps practice you for when things are so bad, because you're not going to have the ability as much to fight that crap when things are bad.
It's about you learning a skill that you can use kind of second nature when you're in like the worst of it completely. Yeah.
And maybe that brings us to the last thing that at least that we'll talk for now, because I think we'll keep talking about this stuff. But it's like, knowing yourself means knowing when your flare-ups are bad. So if you're practicing getting better and controlling your feelings and emotions and thoughts and how they're tied together and making better choices, if you can anticipate or recognize, like, this is what my depression feels like, or this is what my anxiety feels like, or this is what my paranoia feels like, and it's getting worse, then what you start to be able to do, which I found is really helpful for me, is I'm like, I'm about to be in a bad place. I know that I'm not going to be able to not control my feelings and my thoughts. I just need to do the next best thing, which is to separate myself.
Yeah.
So I don't destroy things. I need to take a break. I need to be hardcore selfish, take a break, step away, make sure I'm paying attention to my sleep, and maybe talking to friends, like, hardcore about all the things, because I can't, it's harder. But if I know what mental illness feels like for myself, then I know when things are going to get bad.
I think for many people, though, that idea of taking time for yourself is really seen as a selfish act.
Yeah. Well, it feels selfish.
And depending on all of our cultures and all that, reframing it to be like, no, this is not me about this. It's selfish. It's me taking care of myself. You take care of all these other people. How are you going to care for other people if you're not taking care of yourself?
Yeah.
And that stepping away, I think, is one of the most critical things that people underestimate, mm-hmm. because it's not your lack of or inability to address whatever's happening. It's you saying, nope, I know this is going to take me in the negative direction. I just got to move along.
Yeah, you're going to feel selfish or whatever to take care of yourself. But I also think the other part of it is that it's, I have to take care of myself or I am going to hurt somebody.
Yeah.
Like, the worse I feel, the more the monster comes out. And
you're going to destroy it. Yeah.
The people in my life tell me faster than I sometimes can, because they see it. And they're like, you're getting in that place where you're a jerk again. And I know, like, look, I got to take care of myself or I'm about to be in that place where people don't like me.
I like that you use jerk. I have other words for that.
I can only say jerk on this podcast, but yeah, you and I both know we're not just jerks. Like it's jerk to the next level, right? Like,
yeah. And that's when people, that it really is a thing where people are telling you, you're acting like fill in the blank. You can call it whatever you want, but that's you knowing yourself well enough.
So that was really interesting. I love that we just, that where our conversation took us. So it sounds like what we're going to do next is what is it like to work with somebody? And then we'll start taking a deeper dive into like working through feelings, working through thoughts, challenging behaviors, working through relationships. And it sounds like we have a nice path forward. So tune in next time.
Yeah. Keep fighting in the open, guys. See you later.
Bye.